Hey, you listen to this podcast. Go to myplayvolution.com, click the Amazon icon, bookmark that page, and use it every time you shop on Amazon. It's a way for you to support the show without costing you anything. And it's a win-win-win. Amazon wins because you buy their stuff, and you win because you get stuff. And we win because we get a few pennies per purchase. Win-win-win. What could be better? Come on, do it. Please?
One, two, three.
Hey. We're starting a revolution, a play revolution, a playvolution. Get it? Come on over and check it out at www.myplayvolution.com. It's an online community for parents and early learning professionals who want to chat and share information and talk and educate themselves and educate others about what's going on in the early learning profession. Let's face it, Facebook and Pinterest and Twitter aren't as warm and cuddly as we might like them to be. This is your community. A place you're going to help create. Come on over. Don't be afraid. Check it out. Jump in. Support the community. Be the community. We need you. Got it? See you there.
What happened?
All right, welcome to another episode of another special, not special, it's a new thing, a Monday edition of the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. I'm Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio with Lisa Murphy on the phone. How you doing, Lisa Murphy?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm great. You know, it's been like spring here in Iowa, and we've got like 2 weeks off the road, and we've been doing some house remodeling and planting plants, and I've been drinking a lot of Moscato lately because it's like springy sweet, yeah?
Moscato?
Yeah.
You?
Yeah, it's all sweetie. It's kind of like boozy Kool-Aid.
With bubbles.
And so it's all spring-like and summer-like because it's all, I'm drinking it chilled and it's all sweet and it makes me feel, it puts me in the summer mind. And the other night, Tasha said, did you just drink that whole bottle? And I'm like, well, no, when I was pouring that last little bit into my glass, I spilt a little. And so that's been about my last week and it's awesome. How you doing?
Well, I'm good. I'm drinking red today because it's the only thing in the house. So I've reached that juncture where a nice Chardonnay, because it's like 80 degrees here in Rochester. I mean, the last few posts and I've been whining about it. There was going to be snow until May, and there pretty much was snow until May, and now it's all gone. And the magnolia tree is blooming, and it's so awesome, and it smells delicious. And today I'm doing house stuff too. I'm getting ready to sell my house, actually, so I'm in the middle of that sorting and staging and selling, and it's, you know, Facebook is awesome. I've sold 4 pieces of furniture in the last hour just by taking a picture. It's incredible.
Oh, shit, I better pay attention. There might be something I want.
Oh my God.
So I got a topic for us today. I got to tell a story, and we'll go into it. And it could go all kinds of different ways, but a couple days ago, I woke up, like, you know, it's 4:35 in the morning or something, and I'm checking my stuff, and I see this post on Facebook about this program, and I don't even know what country it was in, if it was in the state. I don't know where it was. I didn't even pay attention to that. But they did a thing. They went on a field trip. And it was a very hungry caterpillar field trip. They went out to buy very hungry caterpillar stuff, the stuff the caterpillar ate. And I got into it a little bit further, and I saw, and they had cute pictures, you know, the kids going to the shop and putting apples in the bag or whatever. And I got a little bit deeper into it, and I saw that they were only getting the healthy stuff. And okay, so I'm not a complete jerk. And when I posted it, I shared it, I said, you know, this is cute, but it kind of, and I know I'm a jerk for thinking so, but isn't there something wrong with just the healthy stuff? And I know we got to be politically correct and we got to pay attention to, oh, we all only eat healthy diets. But if does it have any fucking relationship to the book if you're editing half the stuff that's in the book out of the shopping trip? And so that kind of pissed me off. And the other thing is that, you know, maybe we get everything that's in the book and we just take a tiny little taste of it because we don't want to get tummy aches. And I don't. And so is this.
Okay. Well, yeah. First of all, to me, I mean, what's the point of doing it if you're going to edit it? Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's the first point. I'm with you 100%. In fact, I'm like, yeah, exactly. Right. If I had seen it too, I would have been like, wait a minute, why are you only picking out the parts that you like? So, yeah, I'm all for the everything in moderation, as I know you also do. So I guess I would be more curious as to, you know, my three questions: what are you doing? Why are you doing it? And who is it for? Then I would filter that project through it. You know, what is the intention behind this? I played the Down Around the Corner at the Donut Shop game one time with a group, and I was told that they were not allowed to talk about unhealthy food. So I told them to turn the donuts into frickin' bagels, for crying out loud. You know, it was like, calm down.
Whoa, see? Whoa, whoa. Not allowed to talk about unhealthy food?
Yeah, like they weren't like, well, and that's what they said. But I mean, I doubt it was really talking, but it's a, you know, it's a really circle time game. You put the donuts in the middle,
yeah,
and Down Around the Corner at the donut shop. And they're like, oh, no, we can't do that. You know, donuts aren't healthy. We're not allowed to talk about, you know, food that's not healthy. And I was like, at first I was like, well, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. I mean, I would never say that and embarrass them like that. But in my brain, I was like, what is that about? And then my follow-up in my brain was, so modify it, right? You know, I mean, but I don't know. There's something about, if you're going to be interpreting the book and you decide to edit, I would be very curious as to why, you know, why, you know?
Well, yeah.
I mean, the whole point of the story is that he does get a tummy ache because he ate too much. So, you know, if you're going to go on a little tasting party, I would say let's put out everything that he offered and every... You know, the other thing, too, about all that taboo nonsense like that, and everybody probably listening has an example of this, just the minute you say that you're not allowed to eat something, that's it, man.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, and probably a good many of us, we all did our little freshman 15 when we, you know, I mean, we, like, gorged ourselves on all the stuff that our mothers never let us eat. And I'm just saying, what my experience has been is that if kids really get truly a little bit of everything, that everything in moderation, you could have a whole table of all the stuff from that book, and the kids are going to eat what they're wanting. Mm-hmm. You can, or what they're hungry for, or what their senses are interested in, right? But you can always tell the kids who never get to eat, like, the candy or the cake, because they're, like, gorging themselves.
Nom, 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 nom. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, it got me when I saw the post, and then I realized that now I don't know if, hey, because you had the same reaction that I had, I don't know if that means that I'm not a jerk or that we're both jerks. Probably the latter, but it also got me to thinking about fairy tales. And I know that's a big thing you've been into lately too, is the way fairy tales were edited to make them politically correct. And I took Bug to the bookstore a week or so ago, and we were looking at books, and there was Little Red Riding Hood, and we're reading it, and the illustrations are cute, and it's a version I hadn't seen, and the wolf actually ate Grandma, and I'm waiting and then the woodsman came, and I'm waiting for, you know, the version that I was told when I was a kid, you know, he cuts the wolf open
right,
and saves Grandma. But this, they edited it. They changed a little bit. The woodsman shook the wolf and shook Grandma out of the wolf, and she was okay. Instead of slicing him open, yeah.
What orifice did she come out of?
It didn't. The illustration wasn't quite clear. That'd be hilarious. And so they. I mean, I'm glad the wolf ate her, but I wish he would have sliced her open.
Well, yeah, Bruno Bettelheim would have been happy to hear that he sliced her open too. But and Red was supposed to be in there with him. So in the version you just saw, did the wolf eat Little Red Riding Hood as well?
Oh shit! Yeah, I think so. I don't have the book close to me, but yeah, I think both of them got eaten and shook out, still intact.
Out.
And yeah, not a lot of chewing going on with the wolf, but,
no.
it reminded me of what we've done to fairy tales, the Disneyfication of those stories to make them, I mean, it sterilizes them, right?
It does. And I'm actually really anxious to, not to wrap up my study, but I'm doing a study. I joke that I must clearly miss grad school to embark on such a in-depth, self-prescribed
nerd.
But what has happened is that I started with Grimm's, and then I moved on to Anderson, and I bought, and I don't know if I've mentioned this already, but I bought what I thought was the complete works, and of Anderson to explore him next, And it wasn't. And what finally dawned on me is I finally read through that one, and I'm like, hey, the Red Shoes weren't in here. And then anyway, I did some more digging and found out that the book that I purchased was not. So anyway, so I'm anxiously awaiting my Amazon delivery of the complete works of Anderson, which is now, while I'm waiting for that, I dive into the Arabian Nights, right? And those tales of fairy stories and et cetera, et cetera. And anyway, but the point is that some of the commentary that I'm reading peripherally on the fairy tales really gets into that kind of stuff on where was it actually historically, like in a timeline, when did we start doing that and what was the intention behind it? And there were actually some like scathing commentary, or essays, I guess, on Disney himself, like, and what he did and how he influenced that and how some of the more modern versions of some of the fairy stories are directly because of the edits that he put in. And anyway, it's been really interesting. So anyway, where I was going with that is that I'm anxious to sit down and start putting some of my takeaways together and like, not that I'm going to write a paper on it, but some of the things I didn't know or did know and I guess what I want to say is that everybody out the gate, not everybody, but most people out the gate will say, oh no, you can't read fairy tales, fairy stories, the way that they were written because they're so violent and they're so mean. Like that's the original, like boom, that's out the gate. And the honest truth is with very few exceptions and quite honestly, in all of the Grimms, it was only one. And I almost am positive I've already said this to you. I had a podcast. And it was called The Day the Children Played Butcher. And that one was pretty bad. But other than that, they're really not bad at all.
Yeah.
They're really not. And if you line up a fairy tale side by side with a lot of the crap that they're watching on TV or going to the movies to see, mm-hmm. I would be hard pressed for anybody to say that this in fact is any worse than an
episode of The Walking Dead.
Right, which I know, you know, some of the kids watch. And
absolutely.
I've never seen it, so I can't really draw that parallel because I've never watched that show.
Oh, I love it. I love it because there's dead, killing zombies. That's my thing.
And very scary stories like Shakespeare, they were meant to be told.
Uh-huh.
Like they were meant to be listened to. They were never meant necessarily to be written down. I mean, the whole point of a fairy tale, much like the storytelling, like the art of storytelling that you'll still see today, they're watching for the cues of their audience. They're watching for the lean in. They're watching for the eye contact. They're watching for that. And they're drawing on five or six different variations that they might have in their repertoire of that particular story. And they're infusing them with those details to make it specific and have some context for the listeners that are sitting in front of them. So there's also some commentary on the fact that the minute that we started writing stuff down, although everybody kind of gets why you did it, it lost a lot of stuff.
Because it doesn't, when it's written down, it doesn't have that intimacy. It doesn't have that in the moment. Watching the eyes, you're watching the eye. It's kind of like doing a presentation when you're watching the eyes
exactly.
And you're getting the feedback in the room. And there's that give and take between the speaker and the audience. And it's a thing that you can't replicate with the written word. I've been doing a lot. Grandbaby, one of her favorite things is tell me a story. And she's not saying recite the three Billy Goats Gruff or whatever, although she likes that too.
Right.
But she's saying, make up a story for me now and let me be part of the process. And we've been doing a lot of that.
I know we're not psychologists, but there's such a psychological importance to that, and you being a part of that, and the child requesting that, and then for the adult to censor out or to think that something needs to be censored out, when in actuality, the child needs that kind of stuff. Some of the stuff that we will say is too violent or is too scary. The kids need to be able to project those feelings onto a character so it becomes manageable. They're such black and white thinkers. I mean, that's why the stepmother dies. That's why the witch dies. Because in the child's, you know, psychological being or brain or whatever you want to call it, there needs to be closure on that crisis that is presented in the story. And the story becomes a vehicle for the child to really kind of grow and develop from a pure, like, psychological or psychoanalytical frame, and to minimize it. And it's always done with good intention, mind you, okay, for listeners. I mean, we realize this, you know. And until you really unpack the uses of enchantment from Bellheim, which I'm rereading now for the third time, or I actually just finished it, but you really don't realize some of the psychic, not psychic, but it's not psychic in the sense of like, oh my God, it's in the living room. It's that psychic crisis or that psychological crisis or that existential, like, oh my God, you know, and are they going to leave me and do they love me and am I going to be abandoned and what about this new baby and all of those things that little kids have been struggling with and dealing with, but they don't know how to articulate it yet. But the story allows them to process, to heal, and to like move through some of those stages that they're in, and it's safe.
Yeah, yeah. Me and Bug, we've been working one of the stories we've been telling, and I think we're on chapter 492 of it. Is it started out with an octopus?
Uh-huh.
And this octopus was taken into a spaceship and hauled far away, and then the octopus was given human intelligence, and then there ended up being a girl octopus and a baby octopus and all kinds of octopus adventures, and they came back to Earth and they can live out of the water and go in the water, and there's been death and there's been love and there's been adventure and there's been tragedy and it's always tell me more.
Mm-hmm.
And I get wore out of the story before she does, and it can go.
Yep.
It's an amazing thing, and it's just and so we've got that story going on, and we've got dinosaur stories going on, and we've got bear stories going on, and there's all kinds of gruesomeness in these stories.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But it's something that at the age of not quite three, I mean 3 in a couple of days, that she's drawn to, that we edit out of so much of the content we create for kids.
And many people aren't as creative or comfortable on the fly the way that you probably are when Bug asks you for that. And that's why I think it's important for adults to revisit the fairy tales, because there's a body of literature that already exists that will assist, you know, in having those same kinds of connections via literature for the kids in your life. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to feel like, oh my God, I'm not really creative, I can't make stuff up.
Yeah.
That's fine. You don't need to. If you can, awesome. If not, go get a copy of Grimm's, read them yourself, and connect with one. And that's been some of the comments too, is that adults need to know what their kids are ready for, you know, what the kids are wanting. You start to see kids playing in the dress-up center or outside, and you see some of those themes, you know, if you have all of this in your own personal, like, literary repertoire, then you're able to say, ooh, this is a good time to plop this one in. You know, we're not reading The Day the Kids Played Butcher, you know, to push the envelope and to be, you know, gross and disgusting and say, oh, it's important for kids to do it. There's still intention behind the ones that I'm pulling out and reading to the kids or telling to the kids, but I have nothing to draw from if I don't even know what else is out there. And if all I have exposure to to circle back to what you plopped in front of me, if all I have is that sanitized Disney version, Lisa Murphy's bias right now is going to tell you that there are stories that go so much deeper than what you might know or think that you know, and that is also one person's interpretation of the way the story was originally written, and a lot of it was done for various reasons that really had nothing to do with like the psychological development or language and literacy development of children. Disney is the only one who names the dwarf. There's no, in none of the versions of Cinderella, and there's over, not Cinderella, Snow White, and there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of variations of these stories, and Disney decided to name them.
Name the dwarf.
You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. You know, and it's almost like a little trivia game. I mean, on some sense, like we uncover little like trivia nuggets and nothing necessarily that would be like academic, you know, but things that are kind of interesting, and you watch them then. You know, with a whole different lens. At least I have been, and I've been rewatching them and been comparing the Disney versions, the animated versions, and then now with Cinderella, the live version. Which, good Lord, I think I went through a whole notebook because I was trying to take notes while it was dark. Did I tell you about this?
You nerd.
I am such a nerd. I went to watch the new live. Not live, but the yeah. live action Cinderella, uh-huh. And I'm sitting there in the dark. With my notebook, and I'm trying to be discreet, but I'm taking notes, and I don't want to write over things, so I'm like turning the page every 10 seconds. Oh my God, I was such a loser. I'm such a dork.
Were you using your Olivia's pen?
I was using my Olivia's pen. Auntie, what is Olivia's? It's a store. I didn't ask what kind of store. In my head, I was like, please don't ask what kind of store. Please don't ask what kind of store.
I got to go back to the Hungry Caterpillar again. Okay, so this post that I get all irate about, and you know me, I'm a jerk. Is now when we edit it so much, it's not really a very Hungry Caterpillar activity to go and just buy the healthy stuff. It's a hey, let's go on a field trip and buy healthy stuff and make fruit salad activity, right?
Well, it's something Bev used to say, which was that you know we. And I'm not even paraphrasing because I don't even know really what the phrase was, but it was that sneaking stuff in, and that was something that Bev always brought my attention to. You know, like if you have an ulterior motive, you know, then own it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Don't candy coat your agenda and then call it open-ended or play-based or child-centered or whatnot, when really, at the end of the day, you're looking to do a nutrition lesson. If mm-hmm. you need to do a nutrition lesson for whatever reason that might be, then do it.
Yeah.
Don't hide it. Don't hide the peas in the pudding.
And so that candy coating goes on. That candy coating goes on a hell of a lot, huh?
Well, you know, I at least it did. It did in this example you're sharing today. You know, I guess what I don't understand is just own it for crying out loud. Don't like bastardize a classic children's book in the name of what? In some kind of a lesson. You know, I don't understand. I mean, I can see why you use it as a springboard or a platform or a vehicle to get to something else. But you know, now you got to be careful because now what are you saying that the Hungry Caterpillar made bad choices? You know, I mean, you just leave it the book.
Yeah. Well, see, there that the whole springboard thing. Did you back in your when you were actually doing direct care? And we've both been away from that for a while, like we talked about in an episode not too long ago. Back in the day, did you do a whole lot of, hey, we're going to read this book and then do these activities or projects based on this book? Because I never did. The books were their own thing.
Books are books.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me first answer your question, and uh-huh. I'll answer it honestly. In my first few years of teaching, one of the teachers that I worked with was very big on that. Mm-hmm. And there's actually an activity series of books. I'm hesitant to call them curriculum books, but back in the day, that's what we used to call them. Before there was all this prepackaged curriculum, you know, you would go buy activity books, which, you know, really we then used in order to craft our curriculum. And one of them was called Story Stretchers. And so they kind of used, you know, famous quality children's literature and then showed you how you could extend some of the stuff going on in those stories. So, you know, sometimes I did, but to my credit, even then, like, we would read Little Blue and Little Yellow, and then we'd finger paint Blue and Yellow. You know what I'm saying? It mm-hmm. didn't turn in, you know what I'm saying? It was still kind of as developmentally and appropriately appropriate as possible, even back before I really knew better. Then as I started to change my mind, and taught, started teaching the way that I teach now, or would be teaching now, it, just like what you said, books are books. If, however, here's the difference, if I notice that a reading of a book caused, brought, encouraged, teased, provoked the children to go to this point over here, then I see that it's my job to deepen that. So in the unlikely event that the children, after reading The Very Hungry Caterpillar, were like, oh my God, let's go on a field trip to the grocery store and talk about these food choices, I'd be like, all over that, yeah. Right? Let's go. But that's the difference. And it circles back, I think, to a theme that's consistent in our podcast, regardless of the story that might bring us to the same spot, is are we doing stuff to children, or are we facilitating that which we're seeing come out of their play organically?
Yeah, the other thing I took away from and the pictures were cute. Kids putting apples in the bags at the farmer's market or wherever they were. That's cute. And I mean, but the other thing I took away from it is the kids didn't plan this, and they're doing this because it's cute. It's cute. And
yeah, and I don't like cute, and you know that.
Yeah.
And the other thing that concerns me is that a field trip to the farmer's market, as an open-ended, let's go check this out because it's down the street.
Yeah.
That could go in 99 different amazing directions.
Absolutely.
But when the adults, and I'm saying this with love because, you know, I clearly don't know who these people are. But
yeah,
I'm just saying, but when the adult is leading with his or her agenda, forgive me, but you got blinders on, and we've all done it. And with our blinders on, all I see is, how do I link this back to the story? How do I link this back to the Hungry Caterpillar? How do I link this back to the lesson? How do I link this back? How do I link this back? And by doing that, although it's well-intentioned, I'm sure, you're missing 99 other things that could really honestly be more contextual to the lives of those children that you shipped to the farmer's market.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was one of the, I mean, I wasn't as articulate then, but I think that's one of the big things that got me to stop planning like that. I just don't do it anymore. But you got to get there. You got to get there of your own accord. Otherwise, you don't feel like you're doing anything, and that stresses teachers out just as much.
Yeah, that's a bad place to be too.
Even if somebody says don't worry about it, it's fine. Just go and facilitate. But if you feel like you're supposed to have all of these goals and objectives and, you know, it doesn't always have to be a quote unquote learning activity or a teachable moment. And I think people struggle with that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad we're both on the same page with this. We're pushing towards half an hour on this topic right now. And I gotta throw one thing out there and then we'll wrap it up. Was I an asshole for questioning this cute thing that they did?
No. Okay, here's the thing. And this is where you and I do run a little different in regard to social media, because I'm a part of a lot of those groups too.
Uh-huh.
On the peripheral. I'm not very active. I just kind of am more peeking over the fence.
Yeah.
I choose to often not respond to anything, not with a thumbs up if something is awesome, not with a, hey, tell me more about that when I'm like, you know, questioning something. And I will tell you why, and I don't want to oversimplify it because this probably could be its own 20-minute conversation. I don't know any of these people.
Yeah.
I have no relationship with them. I have no contact with them. I'm seeing a slice of the pie of the day. So I don't. I mean, unless somebody actively tags my name, which then I will, you know, respond on in some level. But for the most part, I'm just peeking over the fence because I think in a workshop, you have come to see me to be a part of what we're doing there. I'll push you all day long with all the love in my heart. You want to ask questions, I'll do the same thing. You want to come up afterwards, a little one-on-one time, follow up with an email, boom. I feel like that's more of a mutual thing at that juncture. So were you an ass? Not at all. We both approach those things with a different style. So although our philosophy and our viewpoint is probably 100% exactly the same, I typically don't push on social media unless I know the person.
Yeah,
unless I've opened it up and they've asked for it.
Maybe I wasn't awake yet. Maybe.
I don't want to sound like I'm throwing you under.
Well,
the
no. There's a lot of stuff.
To expect that.
There's a lot of stuff I just walk away from too. I think I sent you a picture of a post not too long ago. I messaged it to you and after we both looked at it, we both realized we're going to have jobs forever because of the stuff that goes on. And so there's a lot of stuff I don't comment on. And so maybe I found a weak moment where I had to post about this. And now we've recorded a whole half hour podcast about it. I got nothing against what they were doing. I'm just wondering how deeply they were thinking about what they were doing, and there's the foo-foo level in a lot of stuff we do in early learning, and I think we can go deeper and
find a little bit more depth
in the choices we're making for the way we spend the time with and we have with kids. And
well, there's my three questions. I'll say them again. What are you doing? Why are you doing it? And who is it for? And if you honestly ask yourself those questions and then honestly answer, you know what, I'm not really sure, then it's time to pause and be able to articulate that.
Yeah.
I say in the workshops, you got to go deeper than cute. If all you got is cute, I want you to start asking yourself, is it relevant? Is it real? Is it meaningful? Who is it for? But if all you've got is cute, it keeps it at that superficial level. You know, and you know, we could do a whole pod on that. I mean, and not to sound all workshop-y, because people who have heard me frequently will recognize what I'm about to kind of riff into. But you know, if you don't know what you're doing, you're just going to keep doing it, and you have no thought behind it. There's no intention behind it. And then if somebody comes in and starts questioning you, you got nothing. You know what I'm saying? You don't. So I tell people in the workshops, and I say it very seriously, I want you to know why you're chopping the ends off your ham. You know, the ham story, right? You know, chop the ends off the ham. Well, that's what my mom did. Or why you chop the ends off the ham? Yep. That's what my mom did. Yeah, but why? You know, my pan was too small. But now you got all these people who think they must chop the ends off the ham when really their pan was too small. But your pan is plenty big. So when you go back to the kids, I know you're still going to chop the ends off some of your hams, and that's fine. But as a profession, we need to get much better at being able to articulate the intention behind our choices. I will have a philosophical debate with you another time. Right now, I need you to own what you're doing. And if you say you don't know why you're doing it, but then you whine about not being treated like a professional, you know, those things go hand in hand.
Yep.
And so that's the part of that advocacy through action that you and I, you know, kind of christened last year. That's the part that's still very heavy and carrying over in my work this year.
Yeah.
You know, you say you want this. Well, in exchange for that comes this, and you got to meet people in the middle there.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect place to wrap up. We got to get beyond the cutesy and get into that depth and know why we're really doing things and be a little bit more mindful about those choices. We'll be back in a couple days, Friday, with another episode of the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast.
Bye-bye.
If you like the show, check out our other offerings, Shots, Lisa's Book Report, and Tom Copeland's Taking Care of Business. And we'd love it if you shared them with friends, left a comment at myplayvolution.com, and gave them 5 stars on iTunes. Thanks.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.
Oh.
Chase the